Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And yet another Thursday has befallen us. This is LA Talk Radio, and you were listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, sitting in the studio with the lovely, vivacious, and effervescent Bobby Jean Bell.
Always happy to be here.
You know, it's becoming a chore coming up with adjectives for you.
It's okay. My name is all that's necessary.
That is true. That is true. Because she's constantly in a good mood. Am I right, Jim? Well, no. Yeah, well, you're married to her. You would.
Well.
You have to say that.
You may not want the answer to that.
I'm getting excited because this time of the year is always fun because we're leading up to the Cowboy Festival. Mm-hmm. And it's just very, very cool. And we'll get to that in just a second. But right now, I want to say that the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, the nice folks at Black Dog. If you're a new writer or one that is kind of confused, give us a call. The number there is 805-795-3165. I'm confused. And they'll kind of help you walk through it. And by Out West. They're no longer Boutique and Cultural Center.
No.
They're now just Out West.
Make it short.
And they are your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. So go to Out West. Oh, is it scv.outwest.com?
Yeah, scvoutwest.com.
And the number there is?
661-347-9700 or toll free, 877-340-9378.
There you go. And they're great folks. In fact, they're sitting in the studio with me right now because they're always here. There's Jim and Bobby Bell.
Use coupon code WB100 and save $10 on your order.
And we have coupons that we'll be sending out. And we do. And of course, our guest tonight, we'll get one in his mug.
Yes.
And that's going to be the first, so we're going to see how that works out. And we're also brought to you by Target Freight Management. And since 2009, Target Freight, or TFM Full Truckload, is at a truckload service that's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from our dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline our customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today at 844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, we know you're looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323. And as Bobby says, get a pencil. 888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. You won't be disappointed, and you won't be. And if you want to call in and talk to our guest tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And if I can figure out how to work this thing, I might answer the phone. So, John Lenore, if you're sitting out there and you want to ask a question of our guest tonight, you can always try. Okay, our guest tonight is originally from, I guess, from Michigan. Is that what he said? Michigan?
We'll have to ask him to reconfirm
We have several questions
we
to ask
him. We do have great questions.
I know. And his name is Dr. Reggie Padin. He is a, good Lord, the guy's got more degrees than
and he looks
thermometer.
So young.
That's another question we're going to ask him. He's been an adjunct professor. He's a teacher. He's got a divinity, Master of Divinity. He's got an MBA in organizational management and a doctorate in education. Oh, my gosh. And he's written a book called Get Out of the Dumpster, A True Story of Overcoming Limitations. He narrates a story on how he went from being a high school dropout and working for pennies hauling garbage and hence the dumpster diving, by hand out of a dumpster to become a successful educator, author, entrepreneur, executive coach, and spiritual leader. Will you please welcome to the writer's block Dr. Reggie Padin. Reggie, are you with us?
I am here.
Wow, okay, wait a minute. I have to give you the clap.
Definitely the best introduction I've ever had.
Well, you know, we tell our all writers, you know, when we send you this form, this is your bio, so you write it, we read it. That's how it is.
Okay, so fine, I'll take the credit for that one.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, and in your case, we know it's all true.
It is.
It's an amazing story.
You've just been everything. And besides a dumpster diver. And I have to ask, because I mean you clearly showed a picture in your book of a condo overlooking Biscayne Bay in Florida.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
now you say you've moved and you got a better view.
A better view. If that's even possible, mm-hmm. You know, before I was just looking, you know, I had a very nice view, but now I have 180 degrees, you know, of nothing but you know, Biscayne Bay, Miami, the city of Miami, and South Beach. So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. I see
apparently
a beautiful sunrise, a beautiful sunrise every morning. You know, and it never gets old, right? I mean, this morning, you know, as I'm getting ready after my workout to you know get you know to the office, there's this beautiful sunrise, and I had to take a picture. It's like if mm-hmm. you know, like if I hadn't seen one before. Mm-hmm. Because it really never gets old. Funny. So I'm truly blessed. I'm really, really fortunate.
Well, it sounds like it. Okay, we have the question, Bobby. Would you like to ask him what kind of?
Oh, well, Jim and I are, you know, we're big dreamers, and I really enjoyed your book, and I know we're going to get into the book in a moment. But one of the questions that I'd love to ask, which I've never asked any guest on this show before. Is what is your dream car?
And do you drive?
And do you own it now? And maybe the one you own now was a dream car. You've achieved it. And what would be like your next one? So talk to us a little
bit
about that.
You know, I've been a Porsche lover since I was 12. And so, you know, I own a Porsche. I own a nice Cayman. And, you know, I thought about getting a 911, but then I drove the Cayman. And the Cayman, I mean, if you know anything about cars or anything about Porsches.
Yeah, I do.
It has perfect balance. And so it has a 49-51 split. So that means it's like almost perfectly balanced. So, you know, to really lose control of your car when you're going, you know, 95 miles an hour, it takes a lot. I don't know. I mean, maybe my dream car would be a Porsche, I don't know, a GT3, if you're familiar with it.
Yeah,
or
I am.
A 911 turbo.
Yeah, you got a reaction out of Jim Christina on that one.
but even those vehicles are not as responsive as my car is presently. So I'm happy with what I have right now.
Well, it's like the old Porsche drivers from the 60s. You know, if you didn't have a 911, you didn't have a Porsche.
yeah, but you know, Porsche came out, and I don't mean to plug a Porsche, but Porsche came up with a Cayman, and you know, the purists were saying, well, it's not really a Porsche, but now it's really, you know, it's giving the 911 a run for its money, not because of the power, but because of the handling.
Uh-huh.
Again, it's a completely balanced car. You can, you know, zigzag your way out of the traffic situation. You can hit the curves like nothing else. So, you know, the 911 is still the Porsche car, but you know, the Cayman is giving the 911 a run for its money.
So we have to ask, how did you get from a really ugly, horrible blue dumpster in your life where you are today? Tell us a little bit about that backstory that you share so eloquently in your book.
Well, you know, a lot of, you know, number one, it took a wake-up call, right? And so I tell people, in fact, I was talking to a bunch of college students about my experience. And you know, I ended up in the dumpster, you know, by choice. You know, I made some bad choices when I was younger. Namely, I dropped out of school, of high school, and so that's never a good idea. The timing was horrible because, you know, I had just, you know, I dropped out of school, I married young, I had a child right away, and I was in the middle of probably, if you remember, you know, the early 90s was, you know, pretty tough economic situation, you know, there was a big recession. And so if it was difficult to find a job with a formal education, you can only imagine what it was like to try to find a job without one.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I ended up, you know, inside a dumpster because, you know, the company that I finally, you know, I found a job that was steady. But little did I know the company was going was going bankrupt. And so my boss called me into his office one day and said, hey, I want you to... you know, they basically had to cut costs, and one of the places they ended up cutting was the waste management company. And so my boss said, hey, get one of the dump the box trucks, back it up to every single dumpster around the company and get inside the dumpster and, you know, put it in the back of the truck and drive it to the landfill. And, you know, I tell people, you know, if you've ever walked by a dumpster in the middle of the summer.
Oh yeah,
you know it's not a pleasant situation.
No.
Now imagine being chest deep inside several dumpsters as this became my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a wake up call. You know, I asked myself, is this something that I wanted to do? I felt that I had a lot more to give. I realized that I was inside the dumpster because of choice, and because I realized that it was choice that had brought me there. Maybe if I had, you know, if I made choices that would take me out of there, I could get out. And luckily, you know, I devised a plan and I write it in my book. And it took years and it took many degrees and it took many bumps along the road and it took, you know, a lot of frustrations and setbacks, but, you know, today I'm a blessed individual, and you know, it's not luck. I tell people, you know, you create your own luck. And what happens is that once you put in the effort, it seems like things just, it takes time sometimes, you know, it takes time, but things just fall into place. And that's exactly my story. You know, I put in a lot of effort, had a lot of long nights of studying, a lot of, you know, juggling multiple jobs and a family and a full load at school, but today, you know, I enjoy a little bit of the fruits of my labor.
Mm-hmm. You use and frame the book within this dumpster situation, of course, and this is, the book is partly memoir. You're taking us through your journey and then using it as an example, setting examples,
right,
for what we can do to get out of our own dumpsters. Talk a little bit about how it, you know, we move from the actual literal dumpster to what you frame as the dumpster moment, and how would we know?
Yeah,
and how would we know if what would be the signs that, you know, we might be in our own dumpsters at the moment?
You know, that's and here's what I realized. I mean, getting out of the original dumpster was quite easy compared to the other dumpster moments that I've had to face in my life. And I realized that it doesn't matter who you are, your situation, your level of education, your income level. It doesn't matter who you are. And I tell people, look, I got to be mentored by the guy who represented Carlos Slim. And if that name doesn't ring a bell, Google him. He's like anywhere between the third and the sixth richest man in the world in any given week, depending on the stock market. He's a Mexican tycoon. So I worked directly for his representative here in the United States. And I realized, look, I mean, even Carlos Slim has faced dumpster moments. You know, his wife became ill, and he ended up losing his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, he was in the pits. He was in the dumpster. My boss, my former boss, who's his representative, had to manage a multi-billion-dollar corporation in that very volatile telecommunications market. And, you know, to anybody on the outside, you know, people would say, you know, this guy has it all. He's a multimillionaire. He drives a Bentley. He lives in a mansion. He has all the money that he could ask for. But you would sit with him, and I got the opportunity to do this. You know, you would sit with him in his office, and you would realize the guy had absolutely, you know, dumpster moments periodically that he needed to overcome. So I tell people, look, a dumpster moment is something that you cannot avoid. And in fact, if you look at the cover of my book, and I designed it that way, you see a very successful business guy overlooking, you know, the skyline of a very nice city, but you see the dumpster behind. The dumpster never leaves you.
Follows us, doesn't it?
It follows you throughout your life. Now, and it's okay, because dumpster moments can become incredibly educational. Mm-hmm. Now, a dumpster moment is if you hit a limitation in your life, and you give up, and you get stuck there, and you throw your arms up, and you say, well, you know, I guess this is, you know, this is what it's meant to be, and this is the way it's, you know, the story is supposed to be written out, and you give up, then that is a dumpster moment that, you know, becomes a permanent dumpster moment that will limit you. And so I realized that my original dumpster moment was a wake-up call, a great university, so to speak, to put me on the path where I am today. But I have faced many other dumpster moments, other limitations in my life, fear, doubts, you know, maybe, you know, bad friendships, bad relationships, maybe procrastination, maybe lack of preparation, you know, something that limits me from getting to the next level. That it's really up to me, that I'm just choosing not to do something about it. That's a dumpster moment.
Mm-hmm. You write, for our listeners that haven't had the pleasure of reading this book yet, I have read a lot of similar kinds of books over the years, Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie, Dr. Mm-hmm. Schuller, you suggest we turn off the TV and, you know, we really allow reading. And I would say, and Jim, I'm sure you would agree, reading of all kinds needs to, like, come back into our lives.
Well, it's not that we don't do a lot of reading.
Yeah, but a diet of these types of books are so critical if you want to advance in life or in your career or any segment of your life. And one of the things that you bring up is failure is good. And for some of us, that's a surprising thing to see in print. Talk a little bit about why failure is good.
The most successful people that you've ever encountered, you ever read about, you ever hear about, have failed miserably over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, you truly learn the tough lessons in life that will propel you to success through failure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can read about it in a book, in my book or any other book, but unless you experience it, you're never going to learn. You don't, because it's really about the, you know, it's almost you have to live it in your own soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to mention Carlos Slim. And Carlos Slim, you know, spoke to about 50 of us in a room one time. And he said, look, you know, the reason why I've been successful in my companies, and he has multiple companies, is because I allow my people, in fact, I encourage my people to fail. Because it is through those failures that you almost get the notches that you need, the degrees that you need in order to succeed. When I went back to college as a 25-year-old, the first paper I submitted was kicked back to me because it was really, really bad.
So you failed.
I failed. But that helped me to really pay attention to what I needed to pay attention to. And I learned,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm not a very prolific writer. I've had to work really, really hard. Number one, English is not my first language. So I had to master it along the way. And so, you know, it was through those failures that, I've learned. You know, I've failed in, many business attempts. I have failed, you know, in a lot of things that I've tried to do. Mm-hmm. However, those failures have taught me great lessons that have been, you know, the next go around. And I encourage people, look, it's not that I want you to fail miserably. In fact, I would probably encourage you not to. Because you know you can really ruin your life, but those little failures along the way are the great lessons that you'll need in life in order to bring you to a higher level. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, today I'm a better writer because of that first paper I submitted. Mm-hmm. You know, today I was able to, you know, I'm very successful in the area of adult learning and adult education because the first exam that I took in seminary, you know, the teacher said, you're not quite there yet. You know, I am what I am today because some people along the way said, you know, they doubted me. Mm-hmm. And that gave me the fuel. You know, mm-hmm. those failures gave me the fuel to get to where I needed to go, mm-hmm. where I needed to be. But I want to backtrack a little bit and say that the first thing that you need to find, I don't care who you are, is your sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. Because see, you're, and that's what places people in the dumpsters. When you lose the sense of purpose, is when you finally, you know, you give up. And I tell people, look, the most expensive pieces of real estate are cemeteries because they're full, they're filled with people who died, who took their dreams, their aspirations, their hopes, you know, their ideas to the grave, mm-hmm. and they never acted on them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, when you lose purpose in life, you give up. And the reason why I allowed those failures to fuel me and propel me, mm-hmm. and I still have to face some major difficulties. But I haven't lost my sense of purpose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that keeps me going.
Yeah, the sense of purpose is really what can propel you when you're sort of stuck. I think often, Jim, you know, this show is the Writer's Block, and
right.
we talk. Well, we'll ask you a little bit later about some. We'll get a little bit into your writing process.
Right.
Sure. But as I was reading the book, Jim, I almost thought this is kind of like for those of us that don't deal with writer's block because uh-huh. we're not creative people.
Well, you're not writers.
But yeah. we're not writers. Right. But the dumpster is kind of our block.
Well,
you know?
But I think I think Reggie's got something in that, and I think the dumpster is everybody's block.
Yeah, it stops
and
you in your tracks.
I want to go back to failure for just a minute, Reggie, if I may.
Sure.
I certainly am. I do not have a PhD in anything. I have a lowly little BA in education.
You have a PhD in life.
Oh yeah,
Christina.
Probably, huh? Anyway, I wanted to make a comment about your take on failure. And I think that failure is a natural part of being who you are and the growing process.
Right.
But I also think, and correct me if your thoughts are different than mine on this, is that I also believe that people set themselves up for it. And those are the people that actually probably live in the dumpster.
Yeah.
I've known several people that actually they fail because they set themselves up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
There's no direction going forward.
Right.
Yeah, there's no.
Everything comes around in a circle, right back to the dumpster again.
Using the analogy
of the dumpster. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very astute, is that you mentioned failure and that, you know, everybody fails because everybody does.
Right.
But
well,
not everybody sets themselves up for it.
Yeah. Well, being at the dumpster is a choice.
Well, I agree.
You know,
totally.
Remaining in a dumpster is a choice.
Well, being in the dumpster may not be the choice, but staying there is.
Sure. I mean, again, yeah, there's definitely, and I write about that. You know, there's some circumstances in life that you cannot avoid that
right.
will place you there.
Right.
But whether you remain there is really a choice.
Right.
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 But sometimes we put ourselves in a dumpster. You
right.
know, I mean, I ended up in that dumpster because of my own choices. Right. But it was also my choice that got me out of it.
Out of it. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, yes, I mean, failure, as you're attempting to grow, and as you're attempting to really live out your purpose, it's unavoidable, and those are going to be great lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can choose to be not smart about things and set yourself up for failure. And I tell people, look, the first battle that, you know, whether you win or lose, is going to be inside your mind.
Sure.
Between the ears.
Sure.
And a lot of people, you know, there's negative self-talk, their bad attitude, their pessimistic worldview, you don't have to go very far or read very much or listen to the news or to understand that there's a lot of stuff that we could be pessimistic about.
Yeah, we just listen to MSNBC all day long. It'll make you crazy.
I don't listen to news anymore.
but at the end of the day, what is that going to accomplish? And you know,
nothing.
Listen. I don't want to get into politics.
Oh,
right?
No, we don't do that here,
you know,
anyway.
And I could, you know, you could be on one side or the other. And I tell people, okay, fine, go out there and voice your displeasure with whatever it is that you're displeased about. But at the end of the day, what is that going to accomplish? I had a professor in seminary, and he was a very liberal, you know, very liberal, you know, theologian and brilliant guy. I mean, he incredibly smart, bright guy. And you know, at that time, I was an associate pastor at an inner city church, and you know, I was actually doing the work, right? I was trying to help people overcome their limitations. I started programs, and you know, to help people learn English and learn computer skills and polish their resumes and, you know, their interviewing skills. And this guy was writing about it, and he and I would get into some very, very heated conversations about, you know, about stuff like that. And I would tell him about, you know, at least, you know, you're writing and complaining about it, but mm-hmm. I'm doing something about it.
Yeah, your faith in action.
Mm-hmm. Right. You have to do something about it.
Right.
You don't like the direction of your life? Okay. Change it.
Well, and I think when we have failure, especially if we're wise about it, we recognize it and we can take lessons from it. It also makes us, I don't want to say humble us, but, you know, those lessons that we learned, they may be important lessons to share with somebody that's not even yet in our life. And it gives us,
right.
You know, it gives us some experience to be, you know, what you write about. It's an important part of what we are as humans.
The problem is that we've been programmed since very early on in our lives. Mm-hmm. That failure is negative and it's
right.
bad,
right?
And it's shameful, right? You fail, you know, you stop trying. But think about it, and I read a quote. I mean, I think it was yesterday, right? I mean, think about little kids who are learning to walk. And by the way, I have to make an announcement. Right, I became a grandfather for the first time.
Oh my gosh!
Congratulations!
Congratulations!
Thank you. 2 weeks ago, and I mean, people try to warn me about what that was going to be like, and until you experience it,
no, there's nothing. There's nothing you can prepare you
like
for
it,
that.
Right? now imagine my little granddaughter, and her name is Aria.
Oh.
You know, as she's beginning to walk. And you know, babies when they begin, you know, attempting to walk, they're gonna fall 100 times, maybe more.
That's
a
true.
A baby never says, "Well, I guess this wasn't meant to be."
Yeah, it's enough. I'm not gonna do this anymore.
Yeah, that's a very good example.
I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, well, babies don't fail.
babies don't fail.
But we are then, you know, throughout our childhood and our upbringing, then we are programmed that, hey, that F is you know, it's a failure. What are you, a dummy?
Mm-hmm.
Or you attempt to do something, you know, like I remember the first time when I moved to the United States from my native Puerto Rico, and I was in a class and I attempted to speak English. And it was horrible, and the kids laughed, and you know, that was really, really painful. had I listened to that laughter, to that choir of people who are mocking me, I don't know where I would be today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we're first, you know, growing up, we don't have the concept of failure. It is the people around us,
mm-hmm.
who teach us. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, that's a failure. Right. And so it can handicap you if you are in an environment where you've been programmed. And that's why I tell people, look, and you mentioned something about television. I don't not watch television because I don't, you know, number one, I mean, I just don't have the time. Right. But what I chose to do is, you know, I had to look at, okay, the 24 hours that I had in a day. And so the time that I could sit there and watch television for, you know, I think the average is 6 hours a night. I took that time to better myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to almost reprogram your mind. And that takes consistency. It takes total dedication, total immersion in a new way of thinking. Because again, we have all this garbage that we've been, you know, that we've grown up with.
Mm-hmm. That we should leave in the dumpster.
Right. You only have 24 right. hours?
Yeah, yeah. He only has 24 hours.
You only have 24 hours in a day? Man.
He needs our clock.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
You have an interesting concept you call mental power lifting. What is that?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you I tell people, look, I started in my adulthood, I started lifting weights. And power lifting is this thing where you're in competition with yourself.
Right.
Right. You're always trying to outdo not the guy next to you, but your own abilities. And it takes discipline. It takes practice. And it's a little bit at a time. I mean, if you try to jump, you know, five pounds can seem like 1,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so mental powerlifting is you start right where you are, right? And you start building on that. And so you may have your mind full of negative thoughts and, you know, a pessimistic outlook on life. But then you start replacing a little bit at a time. And I tell you what, that concept of mental powerlifting, I look at myself of who I am today and I can rewind the tape. Right, or the DVD, right? There's no, I don't think there's tapes anymore.
Yeah.
But I can rewind the DVD, and I look at that kid, you know, maybe 20 years ago, and I don't recognize that kid. I'm a completely different individual today, and it wasn't a leap overnight. It took years. It took years of working at it. It took years of getting better at it. Of really retooling and sharpening my mind, retooling and sharpening my attitude, retooling and resharpening my sense of, you know, I'm a victim and people owe me things and it's, you know, they're the lucky ones and really replacing that mindset with a mindset of, wait a minute, why not me? I can do this too. I have a purpose in life. You know, I'm a very spiritual person. And I believe that God created me for a purpose,
mm-hmm.
and I have found that purpose. And you know what? As long as I believe that I was created for a purpose, I don't care who you are and what obstacle, you know, gets in the way, I'm going to overcome it because I'm on a mission, mm-hmm. and nothing will stand in my way.
Right. And your first purpose was cleaning out a dumpster.
Absolutely.
And you
know, my purpose afterwards became, you know, and I remember, vividly remember driving back from the landfill one day and feeling sorry for myself and, you know, thinking like you wouldn't believe. And I almost snapped out of it and I said, mm-hmm. wait a minute, I need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use this story to help other people come out of their bad situations. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I've done.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great read, and you filled it with wonderful quotes, and you've shared your personal story throughout, which gives us, it's very practical. Anybody listening, this is a very practical book. You can follow follow it almost like an outline for yourself,
right.
And it's something to go back to as you're taking those baby steps and those big steps.
Absolutely, absolutely, that's how I wrote the book. You know, I wrote the book in that fashion because number one, it's those steps that I've taken, but I wrote it like that so each chapter is stands on its own, mm-hmm. because you may struggle with maybe executing.
Mm-hmm.
I may struggle right now with, I don't know, finding the right mentor for in my life,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you may find that you're struggling with, maintaining the momentum that you've been able to achieve,
right?
And so there's different things that we all are struggling with, and I wrote the book in a way, you know, that I didn't want it to be an academic book. That wasn't the plan. I want the real audience for this book, if I can be totally honest with you, is my little granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, and maybe her children when I'm no longer here and they you know, they're struggling in their own lives and maybe, you know, facing some difficulties, they can read the works of their, you know, great grandfather and say, "Oh, wait a minute! My great grandfather was able to to do it. So can I."
Yeah,
right.
It's
and
your
so,
legacy,
and so that's why right. that's why I wrote the book
right.
the way I did.
This is a perfect segue, I think, to move into. We love to chat with our guests, our writers, with a little bit about the process.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell us. I guess, I don't know, Jim, what would we want to know, how he kept notes through this, or did he write a little every day? Or tell us a little bit about your writing.
Yeah, was everything outlined, or did you just kind of like wing it and every day?
No, actually, you know, I tell people this book was at least 8 years in the making.
Wow.
Right? I mean, I actually knew that I was going to write a book. You know, I probably didn't have the vision completely crystallized on that drive back from the landfill,
uh-huh.
but I knew that I was gonna write my story, and but you know, I always felt very inadequate. Again, you know, English was not my first language. I wrote the book in English, and I struggled a little bit, so I always felt inadequate. Those were dumpster moments that I had to face along the way. And so I always told myself, well, maybe once you finish, you know, your bachelor's, and then, you know, my second year into my college career, I realized that wasn't going to be enough. So I went for my first master's degree. And when I was in seminary, I realized how little I knew, you know, and here I am surrounded by some brilliant, brilliant minds. And you almost feel like, wait a minute, what am I going to write about? I mean, these guys are like incredibly, you know, geniuses. And so maybe I'll get another degree. And then, you know, finally, you know, when I started my doctorate, you have to write, you know, a dissertation, right?
Right.
And in fact, a lot of people, you'd be surprised how many people actually
don't do it.
Start a doctorate and very seldom
and don't finish it.
And
right.
Don't finish
and,
it.
And the reason is because they get stuck on the dissertation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I focused on my dissertation. It took me a lot of time. It was very painful. It took me 6 years to complete my doctorate. And so once I finished my doctorate, you know, I kind of felt like, okay, what else do you need? Right? I mean, that they call it a terminal degree for a reason, right?
Right.
And so I started, it took me about a year after I finished my doctorate to really think about what I wanted to write about and how I wanted to lay it out. And then finally I snapped out of it and said, okay, enough is enough, Reggie. You got to write this thing.
He overcame writer's block.
And basically what I did was I looked at my own experience and I outlined it.
Right.
I looked at the steps that I had to, you know, that I had to take in order to overcome my dumpster moments. And I outlined it, and I'm not, you know, again, I'm not a strong writer. So what I would do, I'm a better speaker than I am a writer. So on my way, I mean, I would write the outline for the chapter the night before, And then on my way to work the next day, I would turn on my phone and record myself. And so to and from work, I would record myself, you know, talking about that particular chapter and, mm-hmm. and getting ideas and getting quotes, and things would come to my mind, you know, stories would crystallize, and I would record it, and then I would come back on that night and write about it. And so that was my process. You know, my process was I really knew what I wanted to write about. I knew the chapters and how they would be outlined. And then I decided to record myself, and then I would transcribe that.
Mm-hmm. So that had to be one of the world's longest writer's blocks.
That's really that's fascinating. We love to hear these stories because everybody is different.
Everybody handles.
No, yeah. You know, I'm working on my second book.
That was my next question.
I'm blaming the fact that I'm a little stuck right now. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that I changed jobs. I was recruited by a great firm. In Coral Gables here in Miami, and they threw an offer that I couldn't refuse. So I changed jobs, and now my commute is, you know, it used to be an hour to and from work. Now it's only 15 minutes. So I'm blaming my commute on the fact that I'm not getting as much done.
Well, you know, Reggie, the truth is, you just have writer's block.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. You know, my mind is not in it. I mean, I had the chapters already there. I know what I want to say. It's just a matter of executing.
You know, that's why we call this show what we call it, because everybody gets it. It's just how bad is it going to be?
I guess we could call it the dumpster show.
We're coming up on 2 years, so after the 2 year mark, Jim and Bobby and the dumpster show.
There you go.
Will the next book be a continuation, or are you going to tackle a new motivational kind of? What are you doing?
What I'm writing about is about mindset. So I'm really focusing on, you know, the second chapter of my book is about shifting your mind. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing is really fleshing that out of. You know, there is a mindset that people need to have if they want to grow, if they want to achieve things, if they want to, you know, get to a new level in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing is, you know, I'm looking at the different dynamics and the different complexities of the winning mindset. You know, and so that's what I'm writing about. And I think the book. It's gonna be, and by the way, I wanna preface this by saying that there's already a book out there by that title, Mindset. It was written by an academic. I think she's in Stanford University. She's a psychologist, and she's written a lot on that topic. But she takes it from really an academic perspective. I'm looking at it from a street level type of perspective of, you know, you look at the very successful people in life, you know, and I tell people, you know, look at Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs. He dropped out of college, right? And so the reason he did that is because he felt that he needed to get his work out there. Couldn't wait, you know, for a degree.
His purpose was calling him, wasn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And by the way, but you look at the mindset that he had, and you know, that is something that I don't think you can learn, you know, in a formal school situation. You have to really live it out. And so that's what I'm writing about. Uh-huh. Because I don't want people to think, and I tell people this in every interview that I have. Look, I'm not telling you that you need to go out and get a PhD. I mean, a lot of successful people do not have a PhD. It just so happens that in my life, the purpose of my life was that I wanted to reach and teach people at the highest academic level. And for me to be able to do that, I needed a doctorate. And so for you, it may be something differently, but you have to have a complete different mindset in order to win.
Sure.
Was your, remind me, Reggie, was your book independently published, or is it with a publishing house? I don't recall.
No. It was self-published. I did a lot of research on you know, the pros and cons of both. And, you know, for me, it was because I had waited so long. I procrastinated so long. I put it off so long. That finally, when I you know, when the message gelled and I knew exactly what I wanted to say, I didn't want to wait for somebody to give me a stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, you know, it, you know, and again, the book is not perfect. It was my first attempt at writing. My second book is going to be better. Better written, but you know, it went through three rounds of editing, and you know, I got a professional designer to design my cover. I took all the necessary steps for this book to be a good product. And in fact, you know, the marketing that I did, it drove the book on Amazon to, I think, number 11 on the bestseller list.
Wow.
And you know, at one point, I was selling better than Wayne Dyer.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a little passe these days, isn't he?
So, you know, to me, that, I mean, it's not there right now, but I was able to accomplish that. You know, again, you just have to have a plan and do it. Now, I would love to at some point in my career. Be published like a grown up writer, but it's not my motivation right now.
Well, and you know, the truth is that more and more writers that we know, mm-hmm. We personally know a ton of them, but all the ones that we have on the show that we don't know, their story is the same as yours, and the reason mm-hmm. that I mentioned this is because self publishing, or what we now call independent publishing. Is a wave that is, you can't stop it now. It's become huge.
You can't.
And you just have to be very careful that you don't go to some of these vanity presses where they charge you $1,500, $2,000, $2,500.
Yeah, you have to be smart about it.
I would never do that. And I would advise people not to do that. You don't need to.
Right.
I remember when I was researching, you know, to get my book out there. There was a gentleman who I, you know, I came in contact with, and the gentleman wanted to charge me $25,000, and what he was promising was that he would package it and put it out there, and that he would make my book a bestseller on the best-selling list.
Good luck with
on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I asked myself, so exactly what are you doing with the $25,000 that you're charging me? And let me tell you something. I published my book. It hit bestseller. I've been able to do all these shows. And it hasn't cost me $25,000.
No.
Right.
No.
We
don't charge you anything, although I might send you a bill in your coffee cup.
Hey, listen, you know what? And by the way, the reason I'm in your show right now is because I paired up with a very good assistant.
Uh-huh.
Who is almost like a business partner, and he's the one who gets all these, you know, he books all these things for me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm able to just focus on, you know, on writing and teaching and doing, you know, doing the things that,
right.
that
right.
you know, and so he's out there doing, you don't need $25,000.
No. You can independently publish for less than nothing. I mean, it's very, very easy. Hey, look, we got to make a couple announcements here, so we're going to have to let you go. But before we do, can you let people know what your email address is and your website address and your Facebook address?
Sure. I'll give you my website is www.reggiepadin.com. That is reggiepadin.com. You can find me on Facebook as Dr. Reggie Padin, on LinkedIn or also on Instagram. And I'm always a big, you know, I love to hear people's stories, and when people reach out to me, I love it. So, do so. Good. I will definitely answer your questions.
Good, good. The book is Get Out of the Dumpster, A True Story on Overcoming Limitations. We've been listening to Dr. Reggie Padin, and just, he's been a great guest.
Was,
and I have
fun.
To say that people should not be afraid to read this book, because it reads more like a story than it does a book kind of like helping you guide your life. So excellent job, Reggie. Let's look forward to the next one.
Thank you.
And go have a glass
Thank
of wine.
You
You've
me.
Earned it.
I need to go to sleep. Now.
Yeah, it's like there 11, you go. It's 11 o'clock where you are, isn't it?
Thanks for joining us tonight, Reggie. It's been a hoot having you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Reggie Padin.
I never thought there was a little like dumpster that follows me around, but you know, I need to just keep throwing stuff in it.
What?
Instead of, it needs to be like, I gotta dump that. I gotta dump that. I gotta dump that.
There's a reason they call it a dumpster. The bookie has asked me to let authors know, and any authors that are listening to the show, and I'm sure there are well, actually more than one, probably. If you have not contacted Jerry Christina, our booking agent and the producer of the show, about getting on the show, her email address is guest, G-U-E-S-T, W-B, which is for the writer's block, at yahoo.com. So that's guest, W-B, at yahoo.com, and just shoot her an email. Don't plan on getting on immediately. We are booked up halfway through, I believe almost three-quarters of the way through August now. We're going to be booking September, October, November, December. The show is just, we've hit a milestone. So it's just that people just keep wanting to get on. So if you are a writer, and we don't care if you write biographies.
Magazine articles,
poetry, music.
You're a publisher.
It doesn't matter. A publisher is great.
You know, we'd love
if you're an agent, great. If you're, I mean, if anything to do with writing.
Songwriters,
please.
Poets.
Give Jerry an email. Shoot her an email. Again, that's guest.
Pulp Fiction.
WB. Oh, he's coming back on. And at yahoo.com, and she will get back to you. She works about 4 or 5 hours a day on booking this show.
I know, she does. We couldn't do it without her.
I know, we could not. And we were wondering what we were going to do there for a while, and she just took it over, and it's hers now. Mm-hmm. So she's done a great job. And the Cowboy Festival, again, is coming up April 22nd, 23rd. Mm-hmm. We'll be there in a 20 by 50 tent. Right over by the stage, and we'll be doing several shows during both days, 20-minute shows here and there and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be there. Bobby will be there. And Jim will be there. And, gosh, we got a slew of writers.
About 16, 17 authors will be with us, live music as well.
We have just...
It's just a blast.
It's
just
a fun time.
Go to cowboyfestival.org, and you can get all the information about the lineup of not only what we have going on, but all the main headliners that are coming in for the festival.
Exactly.
It's just really, really fun.
Exactly. And that's going to wrap us up for tonight. It's been a wonderful Thursday evening and a beautiful Southern California day. A little warm for me, but hey. And next week we'll be back with a writer, author is Jack Struble. He's written a kind of a L.A. police story, mystery.
I'll be starting that tonight.
Called Major Violators, and it's available now on Amazon. And that does it for us. Thank you for listening, and this is The Writer's Block, and we are right here at L.A. Talk Radio.